The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 621, recorded on August 17th, 2021.
First edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 454th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, so, played a lot of stuff this past weekend. Today. First, I started playing Watch Dogs Legion again because, I don't know, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to play it again. But here's the thing, is that, I might as well get the season pass, because I hear that Aiden Pierce and the other character are actually imported into your main game, so I did that. And it was fun. The thing that I found amusing is that when they come into the main game, all of a sudden some of their powers are just nerfed, like, oh, their spider bot can't fly anymore. What happened? And then...
It's just a trope of a
bag is spilling.
Character becoming weaker once they join you.
No, it's more like a bag is spilling. Or it's more like R2-D2 forgetting how to fly. And then I started playing Sekiro's Rumbus of Ruin in the Rumbus of Ruin because it's $2 with Psychonauts 2 coming out soon. And I've gotten a little bit through that. It still gives me a headache. And then I found out something nice, and I didn't even know it was coming out on Game Pass, and that's Humankind. And for those of you who don't know, Humankind is the new game that coming out of Sega, which is basically a new version of Civ. And I will say, it is very different from Civ. Have either of you played Humankind yet?
No, I haven't.
I've played it through two previews. I haven't had a chance to sit down to the final edition yet.
So, the way it goes is that, first off, when you start off, you're actually hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. And you can't really do anything until you've gotten enough stars to be able to create an outpost. Until then, you're just walking around, picking up food, eating, increasing your population as you go along, occasionally encountering stuff. The first playthrough, I wasn't sure what I knew what I was doing, but I got to my first epoch, you know, fairly quickly. The second time, I was plopped down in a tundra.
Ooh, that's never good.
So I was the last person to get a civilization. But the funny thing is that I became the first person to move on to the next civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can place down outposts, but there's a city cap. So outposts can get you resources within your territory, but they're kind of limited, while cities are the ones which you can build up on. And all through the game, it's sort of like, say, having these little scenarios pop up, like, oh, this person has been hoarding mushrooms. What do you do with them? Do you banish them? Do you just say, yeah, everything's forgiven, or you just make him go out and research the mushrooms? That sort of thing. So you have a bit of a storytelling event element to it.
It reminds me a bit of Civ 4. They would have random events like that.
But these actually...
more interesting.
These actually push the direction your civilization is going.
Mm.
Now, of course, there's a thing in which they say, you know, you get one civilization, then you can be another civilization. Like, I was the Phoenicians first, in the first game. In the second game, I was the Egyptians. Now, when I reached the second epoch, I found out, you know what, you can actually stay as the Egyptians. And the only bonuses you get is you get a bonus to victory points. And, or not victory points, but star points that send you to your next civilization. And the goal of Humankind is very different from Civilization. In Civilization, you're trying to have a culture victory or a diplomatic victory or a warfare victory, etc., etc. In Humankind, you're just trying to have the most famous civilization, period. That's it.
That's definitely interesting. You can veer away from warmongering.
Victory is that you're the most famous civilization of all time. Which I find silly because the Egyptians aren't winning in real life. You know, but they had a famous civilization. But it's very interesting. It's sort of, if I was to describe it, and maybe TJ can back me up on this, I would say it's Civilization by way of Stellaris. Now, what do you think, TJ?
Sort of. Like, it really is. It really does take a lot of different things from previous what's the studio called?
What, the studio from Humankind or Firaxis?
Humankind studio.
Yeah. Well, the Humankind developer is Amplitude.
Yeah, Amplitude. So, Amplitude developed the Endless games, which include Endless Legend and Endless Space. And it really does pull a few different things from all over the place from their previous games. I really enjoy how turret, like, elevation actually plays a factor.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I was coming down from the mountains, and sometimes it's like, nope, you can't go that way.
Mm-hmm. And not just that, but, like, when you get into combat with enemies, elevation is, like, the most important thing. Being able to attack enemies from up above. And there's a lot of other different things like that, too. Like, it has some RPG-esque elements where, like, it's not necessarily about just playing against the other players and trying to race to be the best at anything. So much as it is, like, making the civilization, pursuing the specialty that you want to pursue, and sort of chasing after the next era, which, like, you can completely do a 180 on the next era you pick, or you can
double down.
Sorry, a little bit burpy.
Double down.
Or you can invest in an era. You can stay with the civilization that you have, which also gives you bonuses. Or you can go after a sort of civilization that will sort of augment what you've already got going on.
Yeah.
My favorite that I have done in the preview builds was creating a early civilization that specialized in sailing and coastal cities, and building up that infrastructure right away. And then I augmented that by choosing a second, like, moving to a further civilization that benefited from being able to, like, put markets on any, like, being able to instantly make markets on any coastal city to, like, network them.
Yeah.
That was, like, my favorite sort of augmentation of what I had been building. And you can do that with a lot of different civs.
Sounds well, like Phoenicia starts off with the sailing and the gold. So I guess if you really want to go with Phoenicia and then the next civilization, you could just rack up the money.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say what Jonah just said.
Oh. Yeah, well, like I said, like it was like one specialization that had happened to be with sailing in the first era, and then the second era, I was able to, like, turn it into a money-making machine, which was cool. And like, there are ways to augment yourself militarily with civilizations. There are ways to augment yourself with culture. Augment yourself with religion. It covers all the bases, like farming and population.
You know what I found interesting was that you'll have independent cities pop up, but then they'll just fade away. It's like if you don't annex them or you don't, you know, partner with them, they'll just go bye-bye by themselves.
There's also like civics in the game, which you which you unlock by moving things forward and doing well in your particular civilization's niche.
And you get great deeds and all that, yeah.
And the reason why that comes up in regards to the independent states is that there's actually civics that go towards either you conquering city-states or befriending them.
Also, your gameplay sort of I've noticed that when you play a certain way. Now, here's the thing. The game records everything that you do. Like, it has... You did a lot of aesthetics, you know, you got a lot of culture points, or, you keep on building cities, or, you're really into farming, aren't you? You do the agricultural thing, and there's these stars you earn by continuing to do certain things in certain categories, and the game will recognize that, and it'll start nudging you a little bit with what you should be doing, you know, and it's sort of like, unlike, say, Civilization... When you have a Civ, you know, that's just the Civ, you know. It has these bonuses, and that's all you have for the rest of the game. Humankind succeeds in making you think, well, I'm making my civilization. You know, and even though they assign you, like, the Egyptians, you know, you really don't think of yourself as the Egyptians. You think of yourself as, oh, you're kind of like the Egyptians. And what's funny is that there's a narrator who jokes about everything you do. Like, if you choose the Egyptians, says, oh, you chose the Egyptians, well, guess what? We know what you're going to do.
I think one of my favorite things about it is it kind of helps to answer the common problem of 4X, where it's... There's a lot of 4X out there that's really boring in the middle, where, like, you're just kind of on a stretch of you don't have anything more to build, you don't have much more to do. And so you just keep next turning while you wait for long projects to be done. What I really like about the multi-era system is that you're not locked into one civilization that you just have the same things to pursue throughout the entire game. You have, by giving you the option of multiple civilizations as you go, you kind of have different things you can pursue as the game goes on.
The game also forces you to have your guys go wandering around picking up stuff, because for a long while that's the only way you can really advance.
Mm-hmm. I really like the way that they've made it kind of a more engaging thing, because that's kind of my problem with Civilization in any form, is that I don't like that, like, I would say around turn 70 to turn 120 phase, where, like, you're at the point where you've built kind of the best of what you have, and you're just kind of and what you're left with is either building a new city and starting all the projects there, or just working on really long-term projects or end-game goals and the cities you have.
Humankind just to me seems like a civilization that allows you just to do you could min-max in it, but I find myself not doing it to min-max, but basically to tell a story instead. Because in Civilization, you know, you think, well, you know, I want to maximize my culture points, so let me do this, this, and this. In this one, it's sort of like, well, yeah, I mean, you can nudge yourself in that direction, but I mean, if you want, you can do this, you can answer this and do this simply because it's what you think your civilization would do. Like I said, it's a far more story oriented game than Civilization is.
I don't think it'll be for everybody. I think if you're looking for Civilization, it's not exactly that. But I do think that it's a really interesting take on 4X.
Here's the thing. I think it's the sort of game which Civ players can play just as a breath of fresh air. You know, I'll still play Civ, but I'll play this too. Because if you have a Civilization game that's too much like Civilization, why play it?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it is good for them to do something different.
I mean, this is sort of what I was hoping for with that other game by the guy who did...
Old World?
Yeah, this is what I was hoping more from Old World. But Old World just turned out to be a very neutered Crusader Kings.
Yeah, there was a lot of that politicking with the families and the factions. I kept having crashes. I don't know if they ever fixed it or not.
I probably did, but one of the other things is that I'm playing on Game Pass, the Windows 10 version, so I'm getting achievements for my gamer score, which is a nice little surprise because it's not coming out on console yet. It's only on Stadium, Microsoft Windows, and Mac OS.
And Steam,
it's on Steam. Yeah. It's on Steam, I'm just saying, but I got it on Windows 10, so I'm getting achievements. Real achievements, not Steam achievements. I don't consider Steam achievements all that real.
What's the difference? There's no difference.
Yeah, no, well, let's see. There, one thing, it's a numerical score.
Okay.
And for another thing, it's been going on since 2003. So I'm almost at 110,000 achievement score, gamer score. And I'm not one of those people who just, you know, tries to 100% everything. I can't do that. I simply cannot. But I've been playing long enough since the very beginning of Xbox Live that I'm still able to have a nice huge gamer score. People are more impressed with the 18 years on Xbox Live though. They're like, holy shit. On the other hand, I've been on Steam for almost just as long because I was the one who pre-ordered Half-Life 2 and the entire huge bundle. So I was one of the first people to download Steam, and I was one of the first people to download Half-Life 2 on it, and therefore I'm one of the first people to ever use Steam. So there's my notoriety. So TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Axiom Verge this last weekend.
Oh.
Axiom Verge 2.
I saw you posting on Twitter about that.
What's up?
I saw you posting on Twitter about that.
Yes. And it came out in a surprise launch pretty much last week. It had been delayed for a little bit, and it was supposed to come out sometime this fall. And then out of nowhere during the Nintendo Indie World last week, they just said, hey, here it is, have it. And it was, yeah. And it's on Nintendo Switch, and it's on Epic Game Store on PC now.
Well, it's also on PS4, PS5, and Windows.
It is not. It's on Epic Game Store and Nintendo Switch only right now.
It's going to be on PS4 and PS5.
Eventually, but for right now, it's just on Switch and PC.
I don't know why it's not on Steam, but okay.
Because it's
actually, it just came out on PS4. It's not on PS5 yet.
I'm talking about Axiom Verge 2. Not
that's what I'm talking about, yes.
Axiom Verge 2.
Visit the official site. Axiom Verge is out now for Switch and comes later today for PS4 and Epic Game Store.
Let me see here. So it is. I thought it only came to...
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I just remembered. I also played The Ascent, and I don't know if I ever... Did I discuss The Ascent? I think I did.
No.
Okay, The Ascent. I think I talked about the controls. Like
well,
I said,
quick to answer your question, Scott. Axiom Verge 2 is a one-person development thing, and he cut a deal with Epic Games Store to make it an exclusive.
All right, thank you.
So, just wanted to say that really quick.
Thank you.
It's an interesting looking game. I mean, I haven't played it yet.
It's extremely Metroidvania, but I'll get to it. Tell us about The Ascent.
Yeah, I think I'll.
Well, The Ascent is Diablo in space.
Maybe I'll play it on Switch. But it looks really nice. Very nostalgic graphics.
Yeah. It's extremely like... the sound effects in Axiom Verge very much remind me of old school Activision, like Atari era arcade.
Like a Jordan Mechner game.
Noises. Like the sound effects of like lasers and exploding things. Like they sound like Atari games. But it's also got a pretty good soundtrack to it. Got a pretty good level design. I like the abilities in the game.
I mean, I have it. I haven't played it though. I have it on Epic, but I haven't played it yet.
And like one thing I'm really digging about Axiom Verge 2 so far is that there's a hacking ability where you like basically put off a field of nanomachines and you can interact with certain enemies. And if you like, at first you can just do things like if there's a platform that isn't moving, you can turn it on to make it move. With certain enemies, you can make them either like move slower or outright explode, or make them your friend. Oh. But you have to like level it up to interact with like stronger machines. And I really like that element. It has a really interesting level up system in it.
Yeah, it's been getting okay reviews.
I like it so far. I think it's a smartly made Metroidvania.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the Ascent. Ascent is Diablo in space. And it really makes use of a lot of ray tracing, and it looks gorgeous. But the problem I have with it is the controls. You can either do keyboard mouse, or you can do a controller, and neither works very well. If I use a controller, great. I'm moving great, but the aiming is bad on a controller. If I use it on a keyboard mouse, well, great. I'm aiming perfectly, but now the movement is bad. And I don't know why they just didn't go with Diablo's click at a place. That's where you move or where you shoot. I don't understand why they didn't do that. But otherwise, it's really, really good. I wouldn't say it's perfect. It's not making me forget Diablo 2 anytime soon. But if you need some action RPG and you need some old school Diablo, go right ahead. Right now, I'm too engrossed with Humankind to play it because I want to see what happens the further I get into it. And I mean really into it. Like I'm in the medieval ages sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Scott, what have you been playing?
Well, I just finished Cold Steel 2, defeated the boss, rather, you know, the endgame boss, and apparently there's two sections after that, so apparently Cold Steel doesn't know what final boss means. Because they have, like, an epilogue section, and then a side story section.
A lot of JRPGs have been doing that lately. I mean, look at Nier Automata. Yeah. I mean, you have to play that game 3 times to get the real ending.
That's just crazy to me. It's like, just give me the ending. But, yeah, so the Civil War is ended in Cold Steel 2, and basically what the parallel story that was happening in Crossbell concludes at the same time as the Cold Story 2 story ends, so it all like comes together at that end point, and you get to see, like I said, an epilogue that kind of wraps up those two things and, you know, brings it together. And you get to even play a little bit of Crossbell characters in the side story thing, so that was interesting. But yeah, and so now I'm ready for Cold Steel 3, and I have no idea what to expect in that, so that'll be nice. Now I get to have a new story, new story for the Erebonia side of things. So that'll be game number 8 in the series. Oh man, it's a long series.
So I might as well talk about games that are coming on in Game Pass, which I'm really excited about. Have you seen Recompile, TJ?
I have not.
Really? It's in early access, I believe. I think it's coming out on the 19th, but I think it's a very nice looking third person platformer action, very Tron like. It's coming out on all platforms, but it's going to be on Game Pass. Then you have 12 Minutes coming out on the same day, and that's going to cut into my time. I've been wondering what the heck that game was going to be, you know, in terms of story. Well, you know, Daisy Ridley and James McAvoy and Willem Dafoe, and it's like, I really want to play that. And you have Psychonauts 2, of course, and then they had a surprise announcement for the August 26th. They're going to have remastered Myst on Game Pass for console and PC. Myst is a game I haven't played in a very long time.
I know. That's a classic.
Have you played Myst, Scott?
Oh, yeah. I played Myst. I played Riven. I played...
okay, did you play URU?
That one I did not play.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't have the online stuff. And
well, they actually remade it for an offline version of that game.
Yeah, GOG. And so it'll be really empty. It's kind of sad because it was supposed to be an online game and you play with different people, but now it's you're there by yourself, which is typical for a Myst game where you're just exploring a ruined world that's just empty of people, but it used to have people kind of thing. So I've played most of the Myst games, and they're always fun because they never handhold you on anything. You have to, like, figure everything out. You know, it's like, is this a puzzle I'm messing with, or is this a clue to a puzzle somewhere else kind of thing?
So here's a question for you, Scott. Have you played games like The Witness or The Talos Principle?
Yes, I played The Witness.
Okay.
I think that was... not The Witness. What was it? There was one where it's like the same kind of puzzle, but it gets more complicated as it goes along.
Well, that would be The Witness. The Talos Principle sort of kind of too. But because those are basically spiritual successors to Myst, only with action elements to it.
Right. So yeah, I've played. Let's see. Return to the Mysterious Island was like that. Siberia,
Jesus.
I think, is a little bit like that.
You are heavy into the puzzlers, aren't you?
I really do like puzzle games like that where you get to just explore around. Quern. That's the one. Quern was a lot like that, where you're like trapped in this dimension or whatever, this pocket dimension, where you get to live forever, but like you don't have anyone else there, and you get all the time in the world to study this knowledge. And I know I talked about it before, but that was a really good one.
You play any portal clones like Quantum Conundrum?
That one I haven't played, no.
Well, here's the thing with Quantum Conundrum. Instead of GLaDOS, you have John DeLancey. So you have Q talking to you during the game.
that's a selling point right there. Big selling point.
Have you played Quantum Conundrum, TJ?
No.
Okay. But you play Portal, right?
Yes.
So play Quantum Conundrum. It's Portal, but with Q as the narrator, as your uncle. And instead of having portals, you have the ability to control gravity and time and space. So, yeah. I wonder how much it is on Steam now, Quantum Conundrum. It can't be that much. It's not a new game. Let's see. Oh, it's only $9 now.
Nice.
So, yeah, if you want to try something like that's almost... That's 9 years old. It came out on June 21st, 2012. With John DeLancey making snarky remarks. And who doesn't like having John DeLancey making snarky remarks?
I know, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, so, Quantum Conundrum, there's your game for the week. I'm not going to play it because of all the shit that's coming out. I mean, there's so many good things starting to come out.
Eastward is supposed to come out in September. There's Balto, the Guardian of the Owls, that's supposed to be coming out this year, hopefully. Yeah, definitely got some good games for this year. Oh, and of course the Metroid game, the Dread. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to Stardew Valley. We discussed this last week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and one of the surprises, I already bought it, but Evil Genius 2 is coming to Game Pass as well. So, yeah, I mean, Microsoft is really, they have to extra hard with PC games because there is an option just to have Game Pass for PC, and you better make sure that people have a variety on that, even more so than console, because at least the console has, well, they both have EA Play, but still.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move to game news, and go ahead, TJ.
A possible Alan Wake 2 is now in full production from PC Gamer. Remedy has confirmed that their unannounced game project alongside Epic Games has moved into full production. This is the game that some believe to be Alan Wake 2. Following Remedy's acquisition of Alan Wake in 2019, an announcement last year that the next game in the Remedy-connected universe was already in the works. Remedy said in the same message to investors that they are still in full production mode on their second, smaller-scale unannounced game. Epic Games fully funded the project with Remedy, we learned last year, so that probably means that Epic will be publishing the unannounced game. And therefore, it'll likely be a full-on Epic Games Store exclusive on PC. Remedy will retain complete ownership of the IP, however.
Yeah, I think Microsoft owned the IP for a while, which is why there were no Alan Wake games for a long while.
Huh.
But, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who want to see a new chapter in the Alan Wake games. All you had was Alan Wake and American Nightmares, and that was it.
Let me see here. Yeah, I always thought that, like, I always felt like Control, Quantum Break, and Alan Wake were all in the same universe.
Someone noted that that's sort of like Quantum Break and Alan Wake.
Well, it also used to be like, it was a weird thing for a long time where, who was the original developer behind Alan Wake?
It was Remedy. Remedy, yeah. Remedy made Alan Wake, yes.
Yes, and let's make sure to make sure.
People
I'm right,
love the TV shows on that game.
And also, Remedy made the first Max Payne alongside.
Yes, they made. Actually, they made all three.
So, it was like a weird thing with Remedy for a while, where like you have first name and then the last name is basically the plot. Alan Wake, Max Payne. There was another one like that, too. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like the first normal name and then the last name, and then the last name is basically on the nose about what the game's going to be about.
Yeah.
But I would be down to play Alan Wake, too. Like, especially with, like, what the kind of advances, and especially, like, Remedy, what they did with Control, that was pretty impressive. So, like, to see what they could put together in a surreal experience, in a surreal horror experience with Alan Wake 2, I'm all in.
Actually, I was wrong. They didn't do a Max Payne 3. That's odd.
Yeah, I was going to say, they
I think it was Gearbox? No. Let me see.
No,
it was Rockstar, right. I knew it was one of the big ones. Say. Yeah, it was Rockstar.
Yeah, they did the development on Max Payne 1 and Max Payne 2. And then it moved out of their hands into solely Rockstar.
And Sam Lake and his constipated face in Max Payne.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of people have been really looking forward to a new Alan Wake game. And the interesting thing is it's obviously not going to be Microsoft, because Microsoft published Alan Wake and Alan Wake's American Nightmare, and that's not going to be the case here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, though, Xbox Game Studios is publishing their Crossfire X, which is coming out this year.
Which Crossfire X is also, like, it's also co-developed with a Korean company called Smilegate, which apparently, like, Crossfire X is like the Americanized version. Crossfire is like a huge thing over in South Korea. It's, I think, one of the biggest free-to-play first-person shooters in South Korea.
Right. Remedy does have a sequel to Control coming out. So, I don't think he was referring to that game, though.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played Control yet. I just burned out after Quantum Break. It's like Remedy wants to produce a TV show, and they keep forgetting to make the games.
Control is... Yeah, it's extremely surreal and trippy. But,
well, It has to be, since it's linking both Quantum Break and Alan Wake together. That was its entire purpose, was to set them all up in the same universe.
But it doesn't, like, do horror the way that Alan Wake does. It's just more of a surreal sci-fi experience.
Yeah. Alan Wake did everything that Alone in the Dark wanted to do.
Yes, it did. Like, Alone in the Dark, that series is... 2008 killed that series.
Yeah.
They're never going to do another Alone in the Dark again, or at least it would be an extreme risk to do so, because the last games have been so freaking horrible.
You know what's funny is that Alan Wake's American Nightmare is a little bit of a funny title now that we have, you know, American... The American Nightmare Show? I forgot the name of it exactly. American Horror Story. American Horror Story. It's like Alan Wake predicted that. And I'm wondering if Alan Wake 2 will be a new chapter in American Horror Story.
I don't know.
Well, the first game was really paying an homage to Stephen King. As a matter of fact, they kept on name-dropping Stephen King. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Alan Wake's American Nightmare. I know it was based on the TV show that was from Alan Wake. But a lot of it, I just don't remember. It's like a fuzz in my brain. It was, for those who don't know, Alan Wake's American Nightmare was a standalone expansion to Alan Wake. So you could play it alone, but it also connected with the original game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with whatever they have in store.
If they model it after American Horror Story, I'll laugh.
Yeah, I don't know.
But here's the thing. Are they going to make the connection to Control and Quantum Break overt, or are they going to keep it solid as, this is a story about a horror writer?
If they go with Alan Wake, I think I don't know. I get, like, based on what you said about Control, they probably still want to keep that connection. They're probably going to be, like, little Easter eggs or small nods. But I still think they're going to keep the kind of focus on Alan Wake as itself.
Okay. We're moving on to the next item. Jesse McCree, Diablo 4 director, no longer at Activision Blizzard. And this comes from Kotaku. So, yeah, we have some major news coming out of that mess. Oh, by the way, there was also a small item today that we're not going to discuss in length, and that California is saying that Riot is not doing what they're supposed to be doing. California says that Riot is not making the changes that or addressing the sexual harassment studio. They're just not doing anything, according to California is accusing Riot of misleading employees about their right to speak up. So they're not learning their lesson, are they?
No, apparently not. I saw this earlier today as well. They're supposed to release information to the employees to let them aware of what their, you know, their rights are to speak up, and they're not doing it, and so California is having to issue that statement instead.
They're doing more, and they're suing them.
Yeah. So that's gonna cost them, and it's just sad to keep seeing this happening. You think they would learn to make better environments, but it's just.
No one held them accountable for a long time, and and no one with any sort of power was able to really speak out freely about it, because that's the kind of thing that's, like, not really...
Here's the thing about Riot.
It's a huge risk for the people that speak out.
Here's the thing about Riot is that it became harsher in hindsight, you know, but when they had their E3 parties, it would be basically a bar, you know, they just serve bar food, which was terrific, sit around a bar, eat their food, and just bullshit and all that stuff. But they had this gatekeeping with management, and it wasn't just women, it was just a lot of people, in which, well, we don't think you're a gamer enough to be one of upper management. Like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
If you weren't cool, and I'm putting that in big quotation marks, you know, it's like, dude, this is not a frat party. This is a business.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, it's it's gotten to the point where like there was no one to say we shouldn't do this, and so it just kept escalating and escalating and escalating to this point in which suddenly, like, the floodgates have opened. People yeah. don't feel afraid of these people anymore. And now there are a lot of allegations coming out. There are a lot of things that have come out about, like, why, like, this, the horrible things going on. Like, this guy was fucking part of a group that used...
We're talking about Riot now, right? We're still talking about Riot, right?
Oh, I thought we were talking about Jesse McCree.
Oh, okay. Well, before we get... I was just talking about Riot. We haven't even talked about what in the article yet, but... Do you know anything about the Channel Awesome thing?
Yeah, I've heard about that, yes.
Yeah, that was a few years ago now, but that was just as bad. And what happened there was basically the same thing that happened with Lab Zero. People just said, fuck you, we're gone. Mm-hmm. Fuck you, we're gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's what... It was a really obvious pattern when everybody just kept leaving. You know, and if a place is good, people don't tend to leave. So there is something wrong. And I just didn't know.
That reminds me of the Team Bondi thing. That wasn't a sexual harassment. That was extremely toxic workplace with Brendan McNamara just saying, well, I stay in as long as anybody else, and I have the right to scream. It's my vision. It's my game. I get to do what I want. Yeah, nice retention rate there, asshole. So anyways, let's get with Blizzard, and then TJ, you can make your statements. Diablo 4 game director Luis Barriga, lead designer Jesse McCree, and World of Warcraft designer Jonathan LeCraft were let go from Blizzard on Wednesday. Two sources with knowledge of the move told Kotaku. A spokesperson for Activision Blizzard confirmed the departures in an email. We can confirm that Luis Barriga, Jesse McCree, and Jonathan LeCraft are no longer with the company. One source who learned of the news said Activision Blizzard did not give a reason for the departures initially, but they still came as the company reckons with a California lawsuit alleging widespread sexual harassment and discrimination at the Overwatch and Call of Duty publisher. Afrasiabi was one of the first people called out by name in California's lawsuit, which accuses them of sexually harassing and groping female workers at the Cosby Suite at E3 2013. The Afrasiabi-related references have since been removed from World of Warcraft. If you ever play World of Warcraft, even before I left, they would always have developer references in it. You know, although there's no word yet on whether or not Overwatch and its Gunslinger will see any changes in the light of the latest news. That's kind of sad. I mean, if you're really attached to the Gunslinger, and now you have to learn that they're related to someone who is really so bad that they were actually named in the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, just change the color of the guy's outfit and call him by a slightly different name, and people will understand. Jonathan LeCraft and Corey Stockton, currently a lead designer at Blizzard, were also pictured in the suite. Two sources confirmed to Kotaku that Stockton was put on leave last week, but it appears to remain with the company, which I guess Stockton is suffering from guilt by association right now. Luis Barriga had been at Blizzard since 2006, and as game director has been one of the faces of Diablo 4 since it was initially revealed. The game is still deep in development and doesn't yet have a release date. Last year, veteran game developer Rod Ferguson announced he was leaving Microsoft and Gears 5 studio, The Coalition, to join Blizzard and oversee the entire Diablo franchise. I have to wonder if Blizzard knew at that point last year.
This has allegedly been going on for more than 2 years, and during that time, there has been like a suicide. There was an employee that was so stressed out that they committed suicide, and so for Blizzard Activision to not know is an outright lie, and at best. They looked the other direction on purpose.
And it's interesting that they would hire Rod Ferguson last year because Microsoft doesn't tolerate any bullshit at all. Mm-hmm. There's a whiff of bullshit, you're gone. Bye. So I'm wondering if Rod Ferguson was hired because he worked for Microsoft. And Rod Ferguson got some criticism from fans, but only from the game quality standpoint. You know, That's the only you know. Any criticism that Rod Ferguson ever got was that, yeah, that game is shitty. Why did he do it? Or at least not as good as we want it to be.
Yeah. All right.
So you were going to talk about Jesse McCree.
Oh, it's like, it's fucking disgusting that, like, you have this guy that like, a character in Overwatch was named for, and then, like, he was involved in the fucking Cosby Suite.
So, before we move on, let's talk about the Cosby Suite itself. I don't think we ever talked about it.
Yeah, so this is apparently a suite. I think it was E3 that they would.
Yeah, E3 2013.
That they would set up this suite and basically get tons of alcohol, sexually harass women, and other sorts of shit like that during the event time.
Now,
Now this was before the allegations came out about Bill Cosby.
I was about to say Bill Cosby. The allegations came out in 2014, and they didn't have any lawsuits pressed against them until 2015. They called it the Bill Cosby suit because of the carpeting. It was just really bad. Like Bill Cosby shirts on his show were just really bad. You know, sweaters. So that's why they called it the Bill Cosby suite. Yeah. What?
Ugly sweater.
Yeah, ugly sweater floors.
Yeah. And, like, never mind the Cosby thing, because, like, that's just coincidental. But the fact is they were no less shitty about their presence at E3 during each of these appearances at this suite. And, yeah. And now you're in this situation where, like, you've had – there's a lot of these guys are out the door. And, like – I get the feeling that Activision Blizzard wants to make these people into sacrificial lambs and be like, we did stuff about it, so come back to work and stop complaining, please. And no, the problem goes way beyond these particular individuals. It goes all the way up to Bobby Kotick, who could have not possibly known. Who couldn't have possibly not known that this was going on within his company.
By the way, Alex Afrabi-Siabi was with World of Warcraft from the very, very beginning, and he was the one who designed a lot of the famous quests that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's inextricably tied to the game.
Yes. And, like... And, like, the biggest slap in the face is that while... like, employees were doing a walkout and putting out a list of demands, and you had a Bush torture apologist as your chief compliance officer saying on Twitter that whistleblowers are a problem. Activision has its conference call during this time period, and Bobby Kotick has the fucking gall to say, we're going to get to the bottom of this and hold the people that deserve to be held responsible. By the way, I'm not going to be on the Q&A session of today's call. I'm sorry, but Bobby Kotick is an actual, factual piece of shit, and he deserves to be treated like one.
Well, you know, I mean, even without this entire thing, he's always come off as a sleazebag anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wants to develop a culture of paranoia and depression and all that stuff because it makes people work harder? No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he rakes in fucking $200 million bonuses.
Yeah.
Well, for just sitting there and saying, make more Call of Duty.
Yeah, and that's all he did was he drove Guitar Hero and Call of Duty into the ground.
I mean, Call of Duty is by statistics doing just as good as it ever has been with, like, fucking Warzone, and they're about to announce they're about to go ahead with the new Call of Duty reveal this week. So it's his business strategy, and he's sticking to it. but like, no, that guy is horrible, and I hate him, and I think everybody.
The thing is, that's all they're coming out with, though, is Call of Duty that's of any note, and Blizzard, you know, and also of course, whatever Blizzard's doing.
They've like, even before all of these allegations were coming out, they were like turning Blizzard into a skeleton crew, like a ghost ship.
Mm-hmm. And it makes me... I wonder what Gil Schiff thinks about all this, because Gil Schiff is the one person I know from Blizzard, who was there from the start as well.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad. It's really sad to see, like, one of the studios that I grew up with and loved and really cherished just become this.
What is it they say? Sometimes you live long enough to see yourself as the villain.
You know, die the hero or live long enough to become a villain, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to move on to the next item. Speaking of villains, go ahead, Scott.
Oh, boy. Okay. Pinhead from Hellraiser is coming to Dead by Daylight. This is from PC Gamer. Multiplayer dead teenager simulator Dead by Daylight has previously added killers like Pyramid Head from Silent Hill 2, the Ghostface Killer from Scream, Nemesis from Resident Evil 3, the Demogorgon from Stranger Things, and oh yeah, Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger. It's a broad selection. Hints about who the next killer would be included are audio files posted to Discord that revealed the word hell by a spectrogram and letters posted to Twitter that spelled out rays. Then came a teaser video showing a fuzzy VHS recording of a red flower blossoming as seen when the Cenobites are summoned in Hellraiser. And the number in 1987, the year Hellraiser was released. So expect Pinhead, the S&M Hell Priest from Clive Barker movie and its many sequels, to be Dead by Daylight's next killer. He has a thing for hooks, which suits the game, though he and other Cenobites only target people who open their mysterious puzzle boxes in the movies, rather than any kid who happens to enroll for the wrong summer camp. But then Pyramid Head doesn't really make sense outside his mythos either, and deep lore of Dead by Daylight has the events of the game taking place in an omniverse that apparently combines alternate realities, so let's just agree to shrug and roll with it. Yeah, this is just a let's have fun with a serial killer video game, so I wouldn't analyze it too much, just have fun with it kind
you
of
know,
game.
Pinhead wasn't in the first Hellraiser was just one of these Cenobites. There was nothing special about him. I guess it's just his look that made him more iconic from the movie and focused more on him. So, TJ, you still play Dead by Daylight, right?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think of Pinhead?
I think it's a good pick. I mean, like, the hell... At this point, Dead by Daylight has a lot of original content in it, but it also is kind of a gallery of, like, popular horror and video games and movies and other media. So, like, of course, like, getting through, like, at this point, like, getting through the, they've got stuff like Michael Myers, they've got, Leatherface, they have Scream, I would like to see them get Jason eventually, but...
Yeah, well, Friday the 13th is a game unto itself, so...
But, yeah, Hellraiser makes sense to have in this. And, I mean... Pinhead has been kind of off and on through like, I would say, grungy pop culture for decades. So it makes sense to have that character in this particular game. Me and a friend were actually talking about this today, about, like, where do they go after this? And I have a few choices I would want to see. I would want to see Leprechaun. Warwick Davis's Leprechaun. It would be that would be a good one.
Oh.
And then the professor from Event Horizon.
So here's a question for you. Now, as we know, the DLC for Dead by Daylight comes with the monster, but that also comes with a hero and an item, I believe. And I'm
usually
wondering if
it's
going to be Tiffany or Christy.
Usually it's a killer, usually when the chapters come out, it's a killer, a survivor, and a map.
Right, so if either Tiffany or Kirsty, I'm going to... Probably Tiffany.
But the only thing they've revealed so far is Pinhead. Like they actually have. I have actually seen he's in the public test servers right now, and I have actually seen him in action. Of course, like if you know what Hellraiser is about, then like you know that like
the Lament. Yes.
The Lament configuration is like a puzzle box that when people solve it, it summons the Cenobites. Mm-hmm. So he has a mechanic where he can open portals that will take him directly to players that do something wrong. And I don't know what the trigger is for the Lament configuration yet, but it's going to make him extremely dangerous because if you get caught triggering whatever is the thing for the Lament configuration, he'll basically be able to appear right next to you.
You know what? I think maybe the next DLC for Dead by Daylight might actually be the Tall Man from Phantasm.
That would be a good one, too.
Wouldn't Carrie be a good one? I think they need someone that can just incinerate people.
The problem with Carrie is that she's not a monster, basically. Although I will say this, what's her face from Fear might be a good idea. I forgot her name.
Alma.
Yeah, Alma from Fear would be a good idea. She uses psychic powers and has flames as a flame motif as well. But yeah, Angus Scrim as the Tall Man is basically Pinhead's predecessor.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to. Like, that would be a good pick, too. I don't know. I really am interested to see the character they pick and if they do a new map. Because they've only revealed Pinhead so far. And I'm interested, because sure, I can't imagine that they break their usual routine at this point and don't release a survivor in map.
No, they're going to have that. I mean, and I'm willing to bet you it's going to be Tiffany, because she only says one word in Hellraiser 2, if I remember correctly.
Real long-lasting character.
A little trivia item. Captain Phasma from the third trilogy was named after the Tall Man.
Nice.
And obviously, if you're going to have the Tall Man, you'll have his ball that just shoots out at people.
Yeah, that was the main thing I was trying to think about, is like, how would that ball work in Dead by Daylight? That's the thing that I remember most, that little spike ball that just stabs into you and then basically drills out your head.
Yeah.
That thing gave me nightmares when I hit it. A freaking giant pinball marble with spikes on it coming at me.
Actually, Molo Ram from Indiana Jones gave me nightmares. just scary guy.
Oh, yeah, you just rip out your heart, but you're still alive.
Yeah.
And then he dumps you into lava, so that's fun.
But yeah, so like, Hellraiser kind of brings up a point that like, even the most schlockiest of horror is on the table. Because Hellraiser, like, it's popular in the...
It's still Clive Barker, damn it.
I wouldn't say that Hellraiser is, like, a triple-A franchise.
Oh, come on. You know how many Hellraiser films there have been?
There have been a ton of Hellraiser films, and many of them are bad.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The character is iconic in horror circles.
But it's iconic in the way that you could, like, go into a Spencer's and look to the left and there'll be, like, five Hellraiser actors.
But that's the entire point, isn't it? I mean, the Slender Man took over from the Tall Man from Phantasm. I mean, the Slender Man is what he is based on him.
My point being that, like, it kind of makes the case that every single horror franchise, no matter how schlocky, is kind of on the table for... If they have an iconic killer, if they have an iconic character, it's possible we could see them in Dead by Daylight.
I'll believe that if they ever have something based on Critters, or Munchies, or the Ghoulies, or even just the Gremlins, really. You guys having a... Oh, yeah, there's one. You have Mohawk from Gremlins as the monster.
If you had, like... I think if you did the gremlins, you would have to do, like, a multi-character type thing where you could leave a gremlin in one space and they would, like, fuck around, and then you like, travel around as multiple gremlins at once.
Oh, God. Could you imagine having Daffy from Gremlins 2?
Yeah, a gremlin board would be great.
I mean, if you have gremlins in Dead by Daylight, have them acting, you know, as a group of four. So you have... You have Stripe, you have Daffy, you have George and Lenny.
I think that's the Christmas update. You got to do that one around Christmas. Second,
and the only way you can kill him is to throw him in the microwave.
Yeah. The second one had some pretty memorable ones.
Here's the thing about that movie. Joe Dante said he wasn't going to do Gremlins 2 unless they did let him do whatever the fuck he wanted. And they said, sure, do whatever the fuck you want. And he just had went hog wild on the self-referencing.
That was a fun one.
Anyways,
there's an NES game for Gremlins 2, and it actually has a really great soundtrack to it.
Yeah. Moving on to the next item, go ahead, TJ. And this one is especially for you.
Samurai Showdown is getting Baiken from Guilty Gear as a DLC character from Eurogamer. Baiken from Guilty Gear is confirmed as the next DLC character for Samurai Showdown. Baiken goes on sale on the 18th of August, according to the video.
We don't have it.
As part of Samurai Showdown's third season of DLC characters. Baiken is a neat fit for a weapon-based fighting game like Samurai Showdown. In the world of Guilty Gear, Baiken is a wandering samurai out for revenge on... no one's going to know who that man is, but basically he's the person who created all of these bioweapons that destroyed the world in Guilty Gear. She isn't a playable character in the recent Guilty Gear Strive, although she appears briefly in the story mode.
Yeah, don't you believe that? She's coming out as DLC for Guilty Gear Strive.
It's worth noting that the Season Pass of DLC that they've got going on right now is called Season Pass 1, which means that there's probably going to be multiple ones.
Well, here's the thing, is that this is just cross-promotion, you know? It's just like, have her appear in both.
Yes. And SNK has yet to confirm Baiken for... Wait, yes they have. They confirmed it.
Well, the announcement is expected soon, so guess what? Soon is now.
They actually put out a trailer today, and she looks great. She looks like she fits right in. For the fact that, like, Samurai Showdown is a much, 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 much slower-paced game than Guilty Gear, Baiken actually looks like she's going to be fun to play in that style. I am very familiar with that character. She has a very specific sort of moveset. One thing they don't mention here is that she's a one-armed samurai. She has one arm, and she uses that arm to wield her sword. But in her missing arm, or in the place where her missing arm is, she basically has a multitude of gadgets that range from, like, a chain and hook that she can throw at opponents and yank them in.
I just realized, I dare them to put Mr. Igo in Dead by Daylight. Do it! For those who don't know, Mr. Igo is from Innerspace. He's the guy who had the detachable limb arm that he could put anything on, including a vibrator.
Wait.
You never saw Innerspace?
I didn't see that
Innerspace
one.
Innerspace is terrific. That's with Martin Short and Dennis Quaid. Yeah, and it is one of the best endings of any film. Here's the thing. I liked the ending when I was younger. But as an adult, I think it's one of the best endings ever in a film.
Oh, interesting. I've never seen this.
The visual effects in it, well, they're mixed. Some of them are dated, but some of them, like when he's in the pod and he's in the heart ventricle and they have all these red blood cells going by, they still don't... And that was an amazing sequence even now.
Oh, I recognize... I recognize the premise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically Journey to the Center... The Incredible Voyage, except updated, but it's really, really good. And it has Robert Picardo before he became famous. Hi, Big Jick!
Nice.
Yeah, Joe Dante. By the way, that was also a Joe Dante film. So, of course, you have Dick Miller, who is also in Gremlins. You have Kevin McCarthy, who is also in Gremlins 2. Kevin McCarthy, by the way, was the guy at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You know, he was going, "You're next, you're next." He was the star of that film. And Joe Dante has hired him for everything he possibly could, as well as Joe Dante. And he also has a love for Looney Tunes. And, you know. But Interspace is one of those forgotten classics, produced by Steven Spielberg. It won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, go see Interspace and enjoy the ending. I really love the ending. Anyways, getting back to Samurai Showdown.
Yeah, so Baikon, on the place where her arm would be, she has a ton of gadgets that she uses for fighting, and one of them, like...
Can you change them in-game, or is it always the same?
What's that?
Can you change them in-game, like kit her out, or is it just...
They're part of her moveset. Like, for one attack, she'll lunge forward with her stump, and a chain and spear will come out, and she'll yank you in for a slash.
Because
she'll use a cannon, a straight up cannon out of that arm socket.
In Injustice 2, because when you have the turtles, you can choose which turtle you want to use, and they all have different weapons.
She has one where it's like a diagonal attack where she'll toss out a spinning bladed wheel. And so she's got a lot of interesting characteristics to her as far as her moveset goes.
Did you enjoy playing as her?
Yeah, of course.
Well, not of course.
One of the coolest things about her is that she has a lot of reversal mechanics if you try to attack her without thinking about it. If you attack her, she has the means to just, stab back at you really quick.
Oh, she's starting to sound like Brainiac from Injustice 2.
Sort of, but she's just... She's versatile, she's fun, she has a lot of cool weapons, and her attack style looks like it's going to fit perfectly well in Samurai Showdown. Which, she is actually she's the second guest character to come to Samurai Showdown. They had the Warden from For Honor, which is like a knight in For Honor. Which is an interesting pick, but, they made it work. And this makes me wish that Samurai Showdown's netcode was better, because the online play in that game is absolutely atrocious. It's basically an offline game that just happens to have online as an option, but nobody plays that option because it's terrible. I really wish that they would do better netcode for it, because it is a fun game. I played it at Evo in 2019, and I really enjoyed playing that game as a competitive game. But it cannot be played online, at least not reliably. It's really cool to see Baikon come to the game. I'm gonna probably re-download it and play with her, and see how she operates in Samurai Showdown's world. But, this would be much more pleasant if SNK would fix up their online.
Cool. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. Send us comments on the blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments, and also leave us comments on our Facebook page. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Shard of More.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
And that's that.